Welcome to Process Breakdown, where we get proven and successful entrepreneurs to reveal step by step what's currently working behind the scenes in their businesses. Sit back, relax, and take notes as you discover how today's guest has been able to systematize their entire business so that it runs successfully without their constant involvement, like a well-oiled machine on overdrive. And here is your host.
My name is Owen Megabinao, and welcome to episode 89 of the Process Breakdown podcast. In this interview, you will discover the importance of business systems because my guest reveals how he went through a motorbike accident that left him unable to work. Fortunately, he had systems in place that allowed the company to run without his constant involvement, leaving him time to recover. You will also discover how he mapped out the flow of each department in his business in order to systematize it. And now, let's get started with the interview. My guest today is Leon Jay, and he's the CEO of Fusion HQ Limited. Leon, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Owen. It's a pleasure to be here.
So awesome to have you here. The show is all about, getting entrepreneurs like yourself who have systematized their business and have it run successfully without you, in your case. And we want to, learn how you did that and share that with our listener who's listening right now. So before we begin, I'm wondering, what are some mind-blowing results that you now experience as a result of going through that process of systematizing and automating your business?
Sure. This may surprise a lot of people. It's not the usual answer that they're looking for, I think. But my biggest realization was after having a motorbike accident and smashing into the side of a truck, and at that moment, my whole life had to stop. There was nothing I could do. I couldn't walk. I had to be laid up. And, I realized that prior to that incident, even though I'd been focusing on systematization, I hadn't really ever properly tested it.
Yeah.
And I didn't really fully value the importance of it. Even though I was going through the motions, I didn't really fully appreciate how important it was to my life until I actually needed it. And, if that had happened to me a few years previously, I would have been in real trouble, like many other, solopreneurs or self-employed individuals. It would have been catastrophic. But I was able to sit back, relax, and just know that things were being taken care of and that my world didn't come to an end and that I could focus on recovery.
Awesome. And so how would you say your company itself has been transformed as a result of systematizing your business?
So basically, I think the company itself obviously is made up of a lot of individuals, and those individuals don't necessarily fully appreciate or even are aware of the process that's taking place around them all of the time. Mm-hmm. However, what I do find is that as a result of the systems that we put in place, they're able to become more productive and become more efficient. And, humans really do appreciate the feeling of being productive. Most people I know really like that sense of satisfaction that they've achieved something. And so when they can see that they're achieving more, they're happier in their work. And that's really important. As a company, collectively, the ability to scale has been perhaps the most profound effect of all, because, we're able to stop repeating the mundane tasks, these loops and these just repetitive actions that we do all the time. Because we're able to systematize or automate those processes, we're then able to put the manpower into focusing on more important, more engaging, more satisfying tasks.
Yeah. And so how would you say your personal life has been transformed as a result of systematizing your business?
Really, it's the sense of freedom. I think that's been the most overwhelming shift, if you will, because there's always this sense that you're having to work, you're going through the processes, even if you're making an okay living, that's fine, but the sense that you do what you do because you want to, not because you have to, and that just gives you a sense of freedom, of relaxation, and generally just being more at peace in my life.
And so since you have systems in place in the business that allows it to run without you, what would you say has been the longest time you have actually been away from the business?
Yeah, that's hard to gauge because there's different levels to that. But the most extreme would be spending a month in Nepal, where, you know, like a lot of business owners, you get very passionate about your business, you work a lot, and it's really important to be able to take some proper downtime. So I decided to put things to the real test and just literally disconnect for an entire month with no internet, no communication whatsoever, and free my mind to just enjoy nature and enjoy the world. So that was the most intense. But, you know, I've spent periods away much longer than that, either focusing on other projects or traveling. But, you know, you're just communicating on a minimal level, perhaps a few minutes or an hour or two a day at most.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So now that we've kind of shared the results of what you've been able to get so far out of, you know, systematizing the business, I'm wondering, and I'm sure the listener is wondering too, what exactly does your business do and what, you know, big pain do you solve for your customers?
Yeah. So basically, we actually enable information and affiliate marketers to focus on systematizing their businesses. They're able to create the sales funnels, the sales pages, the membership areas, the affiliate campaigns, the autoresponders and the autoresponder messages, and take care of everything with inside of one platform, and all without the need of any form of technical assistance.
So is it that you guys have a software that you provide to people that sell information online, or?
We have an online platform.
Okay. Just want to be clear. And so how many employees you currently have at this business?
So that fluctuates a lot all of the time. You know, it tends to sit around at about 12, but we've gone to as much as 20 or so. And the trouble is, I find that, you know, it's an interesting process when you start scaling a business. And when we hit about 6 people, we found that was quite an optimal point. Beyond that, we had to restructure our systems. We had to restructure our management to make the new employees more effective and more efficient. And so once we hit around 20, we found that actually we weren't getting more done. So we cleared out a bunch of the staff and scaled back to 12 again, where there was another sort of shifting point. And so what we tend to do is we tend to try and scale up, and then we'll find the A players, and we'll scale back, restructure our systems, and then grow again.
And since it's a software company, so is it that most of your, correct me if I'm wrong, most of your people are developers or customer support? I'm just wondering.
Yeah, so we obviously need to have both. Mm-hmm. But the biggest weight will be in development.
Okay.
We spend far more in development teams than we do for anything else, because that for us is the primary focus. I mean, obviously we have to look after the customers, but you know, development is very labor intensive.
Okay. And so, is your company profitable? You know, what would you say was last year's annual revenue, and what you expect to do this year?
Yeah, so we tend to keep those numbers very private. We're a private company. But yes, the answer is we are profitable. We've been running now for just over 6 years, I guess.
And if you were to give us kind of the listener range, not necessarily specific, but just kind of a gauge so they know what you guys are doing above what certain numbers, that would be okay too.
Yeah, well, like I say, we tend to try and keep those fairly closed, but essentially, the other thing is about the profit margin. It's hard to really put a figure on, because we reinvest everything.
Okay, so it's focused on growth. So you can make profit, but you're reinvesting it back on growth.
Exactly.
Okay. I understand. So I mean, for a very, very long company too, I understand, you know, how it works from that standpoint.
So it's very hard to. I mean, you know, we've done we've made millions in revenue since we started, but to define what part of that is profit and not is very, it's not as clean as people would like to think it is. But the bottom line is that we've never taken on any investor money. We are totally self-sufficient within the business. You know, the company was seeded with my personal cash, previous projects, and then since then it basically grows and reinvests its own revenues over time.
I understand. And so take us back to, you know, we talked about, you know, kind of where the, you know, the company is right now, what you kind of enjoying as a result of systematizing your business, but I'm sure it was not always like this. So take us back to when the business was not systematized and automated like it is now. What was wrong with it then?
I think you make a very valid point there, and that's that, you know, people always seem to think that systematization kind of just sort of happened. It's a very conscious process, and for me, that conscious process was due to way too many mistakes and way too many experiences where it just simply stressed me not having a system in place. So, yeah, basically, my original approach was, like many entrepreneurs, was to try and do everything myself. Mm-hmm. That I found didn't really work. You know, there's just simply not enough hours in the day, and I'm simply not skilled enough at enough different tasks to manage, especially a software business.
Yeah.
Then I started trying to use outsourcers to get the job done. I mean, obviously, people say outsource, outsource, outsource. The problem was I found that, again...
And just so the listener know what that is. So, you know, you're trying to outsource the work. So you're trying to work with people who are not necessarily employees, but you outsource it like third parties.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, so people would jump onto to websites at that time, like Elance and what have you. And basically, you know, you're looking for short-term contracted people that you never meet, and they're there just to make a buck, you know, and they're not really invested in your project.
Yeah,
it's very difficult to systematize those, and it, you know, there are exceptions, so don't get me wrong, there'll be people here listening going, well, I use an outsourcer and they're great and we have a really good system in place, and I say that's absolutely brilliant, but you know, when you're really trying to grow and scale a business, then you need to start being more serious and start trying to have more in-house employees. And I just found that things became far more efficient when everybody sat in a room together and you can just look over somebody's shoulder and say, ah, sorry, you misunderstood me. You know, can we change that? Or, you know, they know each other. They can see when somebody's not at work and they're not waiting for a response because they know that person hasn't come in that day for whatever reason.
Yeah.
You know, things just work far more efficiently when you have a smaller closed loop system.
So you went from trying to work with outsourcers and then moved trying to, you know, basically into having people in-house as employees. But I'm wondering, when you made that move, also, you know, what would you say kind of were the things that were not even right with that from a systemization standpoint at that point when you moved into working with employees?
Oh, you know, there was a lot of learning curve. You know, I mean, in the early days, I lost many projects. Like many entrepreneurs, I'm a serial entrepreneur, and that means, you know, I've created many projects and a lot of them have failed. And the reason they failed is because of, in many cases, because of this lack of systematization and just becoming overwhelmed and not being able to cope, not being efficient enough within the business to be able to scale and grow properly. Mm-hmm. And when we started hiring people in-house, again, it was a new learning curve. Mm-hmm. And really, I think communication is key. You know, there's the ability to be able to communicate ideas between people and have systems in place so that people know what they're doing and when they're doing it, I think is just absolutely critical. Otherwise, you know, confusion and mistakes are made.
Do you remember a specific point when, at the point when you started hiring your employees in-house, do you remember a specific instance where you got to the point where you're like, no, I have to, you know, literally have to change the way things are, I can't take it anymore? I mean, was there a specific situation or something that happened that we could talk about?
I mean, basically, everybody looks for that one moment, and I don't think I had one moment that was just, you know, that was the turning point, if you will. There was a whole sequence of aha moments over the years. And, you know, that's just the honest truth. But there has been moments where I've had, you know, just that sense of clarity where I realized that really there's only two ways to systematize anything. And that's teams or technology. That's the bottom line, right? You can only systematize something by using other people or by using some type of machine. And typically, you know, with internet businesses, that will be computers running software. That software runs systems and it run, you know, that's what computers are. They're systems. So they're just perfectly designed for this process of systematization and automation. People, on the other hand, they're a little trickier, you know.
Why?
Well, because they have their own minds and, you know, sometimes that's a very good thing and sometimes that can be problematic. Yeah. And And you know, and they're driven by emotion as much as they are logic, whereas computers, you know, they're devoid of the emotion, so they can run logic processes very, very easily. People, on the other hand, they need a little bit more guidance. And obviously, it depends on each role. Every role has its unique challenges. But just from a, you know, stereotypical or overview perspective, SOPs are perhaps the most important thing that most businesses can learn to try and develop.
Yeah,
and that's a standard operating procedure for those who are not familiar.
Yeah, and just kind of give like a summary of what we've been talking about so far. The first one was you initially started doing everything yourself. You started working with outsourcing people who you were outsourcing work to, independent contractors. Realized that it wasn't, you know, what you wanted it to be. Moved to kind of a situation where you're hiring people in-house, and then realized that, you know, from a management standpoint, you had to really set, you know, more details about what you wanted them to do and really get it off the ground with the employees. So what would you say now at this very point, you know, after, you know, hiring people, what would you say was the second step it took to systematize the business?
Well, the real step, I think, is to become conscious and start looking at your business. So one of the things that I did was to map out everything, you know, write down the current flow for basically each department. What's their expectations? What are their roles? What's the input? What's the output?
And at that time, I just want to give the listener insight into this. You say you mapped out the roles of the department, but if you were just starting out at that time, wasn't it you that was handling all that stuff?
Yes. And that's the real critical point, right? Is that, you know, any business is multiple departments.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how simple your business is. If you're just selling ebooks, it doesn't matter. You still have content creation. You still have traffic generation. You still have copywriting. Yeah. You still have to clean your office. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's even the smallest possible business has multiple departments, from graphics to video creation to, as I say, you know, traffic generation, etc. So even if you're a single individual, it doesn't matter. You have to be able to think about your business in terms of the multiple roles and the different inputs and outputs for each of those.
Okay.
Now, when you are on your own, this is a really, really big wake-up call, because when you write it down on paper, when you get a big piece of paper out and you draw all of this out and then you write down the name of the person whose role it is to fill that responsibility,
yeah,
you start realizing how crazy you are to try and do it all alone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just madness. Like, there's, and then you, especially if you start trying to figure out, well, how many hours do I need to spend? Now, let's say you want to scale your business. Let's say you want to triple your business. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you need to triple the number of hours in each of those roles, but there's a very good chance that you will definitely need to increase the amount of hours needed for each of those different positions. And yeah, of course, if it's only you, that's just simply not possible. So that's when you have to start realizing and asking yourself the question. Question number one, can I get technology to do this for me?
Yeah.
And quite often you'll find the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Can I get technology to either make this faster or simply carry out the task for me? And if so, then which is the best technology to use?
Yeah.
And how do I go around implementing that? Once you've got that taken care of, then you can start asking the question, okay, if I can't get technology to do it, who else can I get to fulfill this task?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, if you don't do that, then your business is always going to be reliant on you. You will always be your single point of failure in your business. Because if anything happens to you, if you end up having a motorbike accident, for example, then one day you suddenly wake up and you realize that your business is over because you were the single point of failure and you failed, for, you know, even if it wasn't your fault.
I'm glad you explained it like this. And during the pre-interview, you mentioned how the second step you took was to get steps together for some of the early tasks. So that was basically you mind mapping what you were doing for the different departments, right? And then
exactly.
Take it from there.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, you know, in the early days, I was doing, I could say, everything from hacking pieces of code to doing the graphics. And what I realized was that, you know, I couldn't focus on the things that I enjoy to do. Which made, you know, business very stressful because you end up procrastinating over those tasks that need to be done, but you don't like. You know, we're all human. And that's a huge, huge challenge. So to realize that I needed to start finding people that were passionate about the areas of the business that I wasn't passionate about.
And
basically, you know, starting to put together a system for replacing myself through Nology and through better teams. And, you know, it's just a case of refining over time. You know, you have to constantly keep reevaluating. And I think this is one of the most important concepts that you need to understand as a business owner, is this isn't something that just happens overnight. It's a mindset that you need to adopt on a daily basis throughout your business, or at least to be reevaluated every 2 to 4 weeks. I would suggest, you know, to reevaluate your business, especially in the early days as you're growing faster. Perhaps when you get a lot larger, you've got better systems in place.
Yeah.
You can perhaps reevaluate less frequently, but you know, in the early days, you want to be constantly reevaluating your business, looking for opportunities and asking yourself, what task am I doing today? Could I automate this? How can I systematize this? Because there is always a way. And whatever excuse you come up with is just an excuse because somebody else has managed to do it. And as I say, that may be through technology or it may be through teams.
Yeah, and so another thing you also mentioned during the pre-interview was because we asked what other steps did you take to systematize, you said something about setting to an autoresponder. Talk about that and how that played a role.
Yes, sure. So basically, the autoresponder is something that I'm sure many people on this call will be familiar with. You know, it's just simply automated email.
Okay.
And I think it's perhaps the most undervalued aspect of automation in any business because ultimately, it's the point that you can create the maximum leverage. If you can start collecting leads, now, whether that's prospects who've never yet bought or whether that's customers who've bought a front-end product or indeed any product, then ultimately those leads can go into a funnel that's automated. That is that the sequence of email going out to those people are targeted and relevant to the point that they join. So if they haven't bought a product yet, obviously you're looking to build a relationship and you're looking to then on-sell your, you know, sell your own products or your services or perhaps promote affiliate products or services later on to add more revenue to the bottom line. As a customer, you're looking to upsell that customer perhaps to either higher price services or products that you may have, or as I say, perhaps promote affiliate products. Now, the other thing that you can use an autoresponder for is to systematize and automate content delivery. Mm-hmm. So by drip feeding a content or a course, you can add a lot more value to an information product by making it a course over a period of time. But once it's set up, that's the beautiful thing, is that it's fully automated. It just keeps running, you know, day in, day out, month after month, year after year. And, you know, there's just so many opportunities for leveraging autoresponders, both in terms of delivering content, building relationships, even requesting traffic from your existing database by encouraging them to share content or refer friends. And of course, by automating promotions, you can do evergreen launches or simply follow-up promotions. So, you know, there's just so many different ways you can use an autoresponder. And, you know, once it's set up properly, you can just keep tweaking it over time. But it's something that will keep delivering revenue to your business on a perpetually ongoing basis.
And what I get from that, too, is that because, you know, the person who you're trying, who is your customer now, has to go through different stages. One part of the stage was them, you know, not even a customer yet. They were like probably a prospect having that issue that your service solves, and then they became a lead because they signed up for something that you're offering for free, and then they become a customer. So this autoresponder thing you're talking about is just making sure that at each stage the person is in that flow of the funnel, right, that you have predictable communication with them that is also helpful to them, but it's also the same regardless of who they are, and it's moving each of the different customers through the funnel.
Well, exactly. And the great thing is that if you use a good autoresponder, you're able to filter those leads and send them into different directions at each step.
Based on their action or inaction, right?
So if... Exactly. So if they don't open your email two or three times in a row, well, perhaps you can send them down a different funnel than somebody who bought your product or service on the very first email. You know, the emails that you are sending out at those points are going to become ineffective after a certain point, depending on how interactive that particular audience is and which path they choose to take. So if you are very conscious of this and you set up proper systems and think about it in the same way was, well, you know, if I were a salesperson and I were talking to this individual face to face, what would I want to say based on what they had told me or what action they'd just taken?
Yeah.
And, you know, if you set up an autoresponder in that way that enables that filtration process and that communication to become more and more personalized over the course of your interaction with that prospect, then you can increase your ROI. You know, you can increase the effectiveness of your campaigns.
Yeah, and I mean, you've talked about all the different things you've done, you know, you did just to kind of get the business to the point where it was systematized. And I'm wondering, you know, back then, how did you even prioritize what order of steps to take? You know, how did you decide what system to, you know, create first, which one's next? Was there a rhyme or reason? And how were you doing it?
Yeah, there was rhyme and reason. it was, which is the biggest fire today? Which fire, if I don't put it out right now, is going to mean inevitable collapse? You know, I mean, that's the, I guess, the honest truth, isn't it, really? I mean, as much as I would like to say that it was much more calculated and everything else and more intelligently done, the truth is it was an emergency response system.
Yeah. One of the things I love that you said during the pre-interview is that you said demand actually drove the creation of the systems.
Exactly. That's precisely correct. You know, it was literally the demand on a daily basis that dictated our choices that we made. And even, you know, the way that we developed our software, the way that we developed our company, the way that we developed systems inside of the business, mm-hmm. absolutely everything was as a response to demand. I mean, yes, I had got some experience in the past. I had some idea, but you know yourself, every business is unique. Every business is different. And we're always constantly learning. So trying to be aware of that and recognize that you're not perfect. You're not going to know it all. You're not going to have, you may have an idea. You may have an intention.
Yeah.
You may think you have the perfect vision of what you should be focusing on. But, you know, the most intelligent person is the person who realizes that it's just a guess. And unless they listen and really watch what's going on around them and respond to that, then, you know, some people stay on this fixed course. They say, you know, I know best. I knew what I was starting out. I'm going to stay on and I'm going to keep focusing on this. And they just kind of, you know, stick their head in the sand and ignore the dramas and the reality that's going on around them.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, to be constantly conscious and actually talking to your team, looking at the numbers and listening to your customers and seeing where that demand actually is and putting your focus there is extremely important. And over time, you know, if you are conscious about putting systems in place, then those fires will be put out and they take care of themselves in the future. And by doing that slowly, you know, piece by piece, you put in systems and eventually you end up with a complete company that is systematized.
So how exactly then did you document procedures and processes for the business? You know, what tools did you even use?
So, I mean, we were fairly fortunate in as much as the fact that we were, you know, a coding team at the very core. So
at the very core, you're delivering a product, which is a software, okay?
Exactly. And so basically a large part of our team were programmers, which meant that we tended to have a we will do it ourselves attitude. Now, obviously, that's not true for everything. There was a lot of pieces of software that we would outsource. You can't build everything yourself, even as a programming team. Mm-hmm. But what we did do was build a lot of the tools that we wanted to see ourselves for our own business. And we would build that into our software because basically we used our own software to market ourselves. We used our own software to run our own business. And so every time we came up against a challenge, we would say, well, if we're facing this challenge, that means our customers are probably facing the same challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we find a solution to it and we'll code that into our software or we'll code a little script that will enable us to automate that part of our business and take care of that for us. So that was, you know, that was a very core part of our business. Obviously, it's not going to be suitable for everybody, but ultimately, you know, most people, if you recognize an opportunity, even for me in one of my very early businesses, I was installing like a content management scripts for customers.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognized that installing them manually was taking my time. So then I hired an outsourcer to do it. But then I realized that I was paying for his time and it was taking time to send out the request and wait for him to complete it and send it back. So then I hired a coder to actually create an auto install script for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it cost almost nothing. But once it was done, it meant that it literally took about 60 seconds to install the script that was basically taking about, you know, nearly an hour to do manually. And, you know, over a period of time, the payback on that became phenomenal. So, you know, even if you don't have a coding team, recognize that there's a lot of ways that you can, if you get the idea, somebody out there, just put a request out and somebody out there will help you find a solution.
Yeah, you also mentioned something about having a wiki. What role did that play as well?
Right. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of questions, particularly with new staff.
Mm-hmm.
So you know we have questions from customers and we have questions from internal staff, and in both cases basically you can take two approaches. One is to simply try and answer the question every time somebody asks it, somebody who knows the answer, and get them to give the answer to the person asking. Or of course you can recognize that there's a lot of repeated questions and simply start creating a wiki or an FAQ system that will enable people to search for the answers they want. And of course that creates a system that is now run by technology and reduces the need and pressures on staffing and the costs around that.
So what was kind of like the determinant to decide whether, okay, should I create a wiki entry for the answer to this question? Was it like after the same question has been asked how many times? Or
no, I'm just trying to understand. Yeah, we tended to try and basically make it a process that if it got asked once, it went in the system.
Just once.
Because, right. Because basically if it gets asked once, you mm-hmm. have to answer it once. So why not answer it inside of the wiki? And then you're not guessing. You know, you don't need a system to kind of calculate and say, well, okay, did that one come up three times? You know, the process and the labor required to calculate, did a question get asked three times? And of course, you know, then you've got to calculate, well, how was it asked? Was it asked in exactly the same way, et cetera, et cetera? So instead of doing that, we just said, well, look, if a question is being asked, then the chances are it will be asked again, whether it's now or whether it's later. And of course, if you have staff changeovers, etc., the person who may know the answer today, they may not be there tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so rather than take that risk, it's really important to document and catalog as many answers as you can possibly get. So when somebody asks the question, that's an opportunity for you to systematize an answer.
Okay. And so at that time when you were working on systematizing and actually automating your business, you know, what books or even mentors had the most influence on you and why?
Yeah, that's again a tricky question because I've studied so many books on marketing and business, but very, very few on systematization. And I think that in retrospect, that's a real shame. One of the things I would do, obviously, to encourage all of your listeners is to go and find some really good books on systematization. I didn't have that benefit,
yeah,
which is why it probably took me way longer than it should have done, because of course if I'd have got some decent guidance then perhaps I'd have figured this out much sooner. But one of my favorite books has always been Richard Branson's Losing My Virginity, not because it's a technical manual on how to do things, but because it's an insight into how to think and act like a billionaire. You know, he's really, really passionate about finding the right people to put into place. You know, again, somebody asked me before, well, how do you systematize? And the answer is, well, actually, I don't systematize that much. I found somebody else who knows how to do it and get them to do that. Because putting SOPs into place, for example, that's not mm-hmm. my skill set.
Yeah.
It just isn't. And I might be able to do it. I'm intelligent enough to try and figure it out, but I'm not the best person for the job. So rather than trying to save a buck and try to do a, you know, half professional job, why not just get somebody who knows what they're doing to do it properly?
But I want to dive into that a little bit, because the thing is, on one hand, there's employees who are doing the work, and then there's you, right? So in your case, how are you getting the employees to contribute to the creation of the standard operating procedures, or did you hire somebody separately different whose job was just to make sure that those things were created?
Exactly. Well, you know, it's a little of both.
Okay.
So, I mean, these days I don't really get involved with it at all. You know, it's now self-running in that regard. So, but one of the early processes, you know, before we could actually afford to hire somebody, or, you know, the team was too small to really look at somebody to really focus on that, it's about educating your employees to think in that way. Mm-hmm. And this is something they won't be trained in. You know, this isn't something that comes naturally to most people. So we had to sit down and have a few team meetings that looked at and said, well, look, these are the problems we're having. This mm-hmm. is the solution to those problems on an ongoing basis. So each individual is then encouraged to look for opportunities to document and systematize their various tasks and to think in that way.
Okay. I'm just a plain devil's advocate here. So, you know, from the standpoint of being an employee now, you're showing how you get your work done. That makes you replaceable. So what's the incentive?
Well, yes and no. I mean, obviously, like, for example, with a coder, a coder is never replaceable. Customer support, in my mind, is not replaceable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can minimize the pressure on those individuals, but you can't replace those individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even, for example, with graphics, you know, there was a tendency for a lot of graphics or video guys to go out there and just simply try to create everything themselves. And we said, well, mm-hmm. why don't you just use something like Video Hive or iStock and utilize pre-made graphics, pre-made templates, etc., that are mm-hmm. essentially, you know, part of a system. And yeah. there's an initial resistance because they said, well, you know, I'm not doing it. What's the point of me? And I said, well, I still need somebody to edit those things, still need somebody to be creative with those resources. And, you know, once they get their head around the fact that their job is not under threat, you know, even okay. the programmers, when we first started out and said, well, if we create this system for you that will go out and build all your websites, why will you need us?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, well, because once we get to that level, it means we can now play at a higher level.
I like that, though, because what I'm hearing from that is, make sure that when you're, you know, if you're going through that situation where you're finding some pushback, make sure that they understand that, you know, by systematizing the business, it allows them to play at a higher level. Instead of being
exactly.
down in the mundane, now they're going to the next level of their career where they actually get to be more creative.
Precisely. And, you know, they get to focus on new things. And hopefully if you're hiring the right people, and of course, this is the caveat to this, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you have a low level, if you have a C player that can't really think
like that
beyond their current level, they don't want to be challenged, they don't mm-hmm. want to grow, they don't want anything, they just want to be able to sit down and, you know, install WordPress scripts all day, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to go beyond that. Well, then perhaps you hired the wrong person.
Yeah.
You know, and it's almost, this is, you know, being able to introduce this level of thinking is almost a test as to whether or not you have the right people in your team.
Yeah, because the A player is thinking of, how do I go to the next level in my career? And if you can show that A player logically why this will help them do that, then it's just like, exactly. Okay, why am I not?
You can see the excitement. When you get it, they suddenly, their eyes light up and it's like, oh, wow, I don't have to spend my whole life just doing what I already know. I can grow. I can learn more. I can develop more. I can be more productive. I can contribute more. And they get excited by that. And that's really, really cool to see.
Yeah. And okay, so here's the thing now is, you know, this conversation, if we keep talking about all the things you did and the successes you had, and we don't talk about the challenges, I feel like we don't round the conversation correctly. You know, it gives the impression that it's just all roses. So what will you say were the biggest challenges that you experienced, you know, when you initially tried to systematize the business, and, you know, how did you solve, you know, some of these biggest challenges?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is, again, is a very good point, because if you read sales pages out there all day long, then, you know, so many marketers try to make it sound like business is so easy and and it's all roses. And of course it's not. I mean, my God, if you're not prepared for a fight, if you're not prepared for a challenge, then go and become an employee in a, you know, a mediocre job at best.
Yeah.
Because you have to adapt the mindset and the attitude that life is going to, and business in particular, is going to throw a lot of challenges at you. So, yeah, some of the biggest ones, finding the right software. I mean, there's so many solutions out there for each different challenge. Let's say an autoresponder, or let's say a content management system,
mm-hmm.
whatever it may be. There are so many solutions out there today. And none of them are perfect. That's the bottom line truth.
Yeah. Right?
Even the solutions we make, they're not perfect. Nobody's solution is. And no solution is going to fit every single person's need either.
Yeah.
So trying to find and identify what are your specific needs and then find the best solution to that, that was a huge challenge. But again, you know, if you don't overcome that challenge, you won't move forward.
Yeah.
Over hiring people. You know, again, that's another huge challenge. A lot of people I speak to say, yeah, I tried hiring people. I tried partnering with people. It didn't work.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, what's your point? It didn't work. So I just find it easier to do it all myself.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, but, you know, that means you're going to be stuck against a brick wall. If you don't overcome this challenge and recognize that you will make mistakes, right? You will find the wrong, you will choose the wrong software. You will choose the wrong people. It's not if, it's just when. And understanding that that's part of the process and learning to deal with that, that can be quite challenging at times.
So was the way of solving those two more of a stick it through and figure it out kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. So in our case, you know, we threw a few hundred thousand dollars and built our own software and hired a lot of the wrong people and had to fire a lot of the wrong people to find the right people, you know, and that was just, that was just hard work. There's no other way around it.
And I get that too, because
hard work process.
Because, for instance, using the example of, you know, the hiring side, you know, you learn from how you hired the wrong person the last time, and you take those learnings and use it for the next hiring to now know, okay, this is how I identify for this very role who's right. So it's by doing that, being in the market, making the mistakes and learning it, that's how you take the learnings to improve. So I get how sticking it through helped you solve those two challenges. The other challenge you mentioned during the pre-interview was, you know, one of the biggest challenges from a CEO's perspective is linking it all together. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's sometimes easy to focus on a single process or a single department or a single task.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, okay, that's great. But the problem is a company, even a one-man operation business, isn't a single process. It's not a single task.
It's multiple parts, yeah.
Exactly. It's heaps of parts that are all working and moving together.
Yeah.
And to try and coordinate that, particularly across different departments. So, for example, one of the biggest challenges that we had was marketing and software development.
Yeah.
Right, they've both got different time agendas. They've both got different mindsets. They've got mm-hmm. different attitudes. Now, the challenge is, of course, that there can be often a little bit of a battle internally where individuals start, you know, feeling like, well, it's us against them.
Yeah,
and you've got to move past that. You've got to find a solution to that and recognize that that's just kind of human nature to some degree, and mm-hmm. bring it back and say, look, we are working together. We have to find a way. We're not working against each other. The only way that any of us succeed is by working
all together. Yeah,
exactly. Cohesively as a single unit in the bigger picture. We may operate as individual units, but ultimately we're working collectively as a single unit. And when people understand that and learn to adopt that mentality, it becomes a lot easier. But of course, there's still always challenges. You know, that's, and it's just really about becoming conscious and, again, focusing on each challenge one at a time and trying to find the best solution you possibly can. And it's probably never going to be perfect, but it keeps improving, you know, systematically over time.
Yeah. And so, you know, given all these challenges that you mentioned and even having to go through it several times before you figured it out, I was just wondering, you know, why did you even stay committed to this goal of systematizing your business?
Because I had to face the realization that it was the only intelligent way to do things.
How so?
Well, if I didn't do that, then, you know, it may have been cheaper, it may have been simpler in the long term to ignore systematization. Yeah. But in the long term, it meant that my business would never grow. It meant that I would always be working in it. It meant that I would always be putting out fires. It meant that I would always be struggling and facing headaches and yeah. having nobody else to take care of them, having, you know, not having proper systems to make them simpler and smoother. And the idea of, you know, building a business and being stuck in that business for your entire life because you're unable to sell it, you're unable to do anything with it, it's unable to grow, and all you're doing is struggling to make ends meet.
Yeah.
Purely because you're afraid of facing the challenges of systematization, that's just not who I am.
Yeah, so you went with the option that will let you achieve those goals. So let's move exactly. Bring the story more to recent times. So I'm wondering, at what point in time in the story now did you get to the point where you felt like, you know, you systematized the entire business and it could actually run without you successfully? Do you remember what point in time that was?
Well, I mean, the big realization was the motorbike accident. I mean, that was definitely the...
Aha, that, yeah.
The aha, actually... that, okay, yeah. I mean, you know, could I leave the business at that point? Probably not. You know, there was still a lot that I needed to input to see mm-hmm. the vision grow where I'd like it to be. But I didn't need to be involved in the business. And that was a critical turning point. And that, you know, that was probably about 3 years or so, 3 to 4 years into the business.
Okay,
So, you know, it certainly wasn't overnight, but more recently I've been involved with a few other projects that I've had to, you know, that have got me very excited and probably more where I want to be for the future.
Yeah.
And so, you know, knowing that that's my current passion and my focus, then I haven't been spending anywhere near as much time, and that's been really, really, you know, great to know that the business is running, even though I'm pursuing other goals.
Awesome. And so now let's come into more recent times. You know, what would you say are the different parts of your business and the specific systems that you have in each part? So just to make that question clear, imagine your business as kind of like a conveyor belt. On one point is, you know, a prospect who has a problem that your yes. business solves. And then on the other part is that person now is no longer a prospect or a lead, is actually a customer and is raving and, you know, telling everybody about you guys or how you guys solve that problem. But behind the scenes in your company is, you know, different parts and systems, you know, making that transformation happen. And I want to kind of give the listeners kind of a behind the scenes yeah. of what's happening in your business to make that happen.
Sure. So, I mean, if you look at the big picture, really the first entry point to a business is when the customer enters it. And so from that perspective, we looked at lead acquisition and how we could automate lead acquisition. I mean, I love affiliates for that, for example, because, you know, affiliates will go out and do a lot of the hard work for you and send you the leads mm-hmm. and you're only paying on results. So, you know, that's an example of how you can actually automate and systematize lead acquisition. The second point is capturing that lead and then building a relationship with them. So we talked about the order responders, obviously. And so we really utilize order responders a lot in that process. Next, once we've tried to establish and build a relationship with that person, we want to build the trust so that, you know, we can ultimately encourage them or build that or strengthen that relationship sufficiently so that they will end up wanting to buy with us at some point. And that may be immediately or it may be a lot longer period of time, but trust is very, very critical. So again, looking at ways we can automate and systematize the trust building process. Then, of course, it's converting conversions. So we need to convert that prospect into a customer. And because we have the evergreen sales funnel processes and our order responders, we go out and we run promotions when we feel that we've built enough or established enough rapport and trust building with a new prospect. So again, that's all automated. And then once you've actually sold that customer, Obviously, you've got to follow up with them in terms of delivering the product, delivering training, delivering support, and then eventually, finally, on selling other products or services when the time is right.
Okay. And so, you know, since we're talking about currently and how things work, I'm wondering, you know, what systems you have in place right now that enable your employees to know all that they need to do in regards to the tasks for their job?
Yeah, so I mentioned earlier about SOPs, mm-hmm. you know, the standard operating procedures. So really, this is just a checklist and, you know, what role, defining clearly the different roles within the business and the different positions, and then having procedures to follow that say, well, in the case that this happens, then what do you do? In the case that this happens, what do you do? So some of the main, and you know, you want to start with the main tasks. This is really, really important for hiring. You know, when you hire somebody new, it speeds the training process up massively and reduces the load on other team members because they have systems that they can follow. Mm-hmm. So if you can try and write it out in that respect and say, well, look, if I had to hire a new person for this position, how could I give them all of the information that they need to fulfill that position with as little input from any other person in the business as possible?
And you mentioned during the pre-interview, you also have Trello for communicating between Correct. Support and programming department. Talk about that.
So Trello, for those who are not familiar with it, is basically a piece of software that everybody can access. It's web-based. It's a cloud-based platform, and just has little tasks. You know, they have cards, so mm-hmm. you can write out cards or communications, and anybody can log in and see that task, and so you can catalog and organize. And so when somebody's completed a task, they can then move it to a different column so that everybody else can see that that task has now been complete and done. So we do use Trello a lot for that.
For task management and communication. Yep. Okay. And then you said the programmers already know what they need to do. How so?
Well, we use a system called Scrum. Okay. That's a very popular programming management system. You can actually use it a lot for your own tasks.
Is that what you kind of like give the non-programmer kind of very, very brief understanding of what Scrum is, just in case?
Yeah, so basically you outline the tasks that need to be done. Mm-hmm. You then organize it in terms of, well, what are we focusing on now? Mm-hmm. What's coming soon? Mm-hmm. And then who is doing what? What is under testing, and then what is complete. So we have like a different columns.
Yeah.
And we have it on a giant, great big whiteboard, and then everything on post-it notes. Mm-hmm. So we can see, right, what tasks are needing to be done, what's a priority, and then they'll have a meeting called a scrum where they come down, they identify the tasks, they then choose which task that they're going to be focused on. That task then gets moved into the, okay, I'm doing it column. And so anybody can walk in at any moment, see exactly who's working on which task right now. They can see which tasks have been completed and which are under review or under testing, and then which have been signed off and complete and made live. So it really does create a lot of efficiency and focus within the programming team.
Yeah. During the pre-interview, you also mentioned something else you guys have, which is an onboarding program for new programmers as well as onboarding for new support people. Talk about that.
Yeah, so, you know, whenever this really comes back to an SOP, really, but okay. essentially when any new staff member joins, then, you know, through experience, we learned the challenges that they're likely to face. We've learned the questions that they're likely to be asking. And so we have systems in place. Obviously, we need to, for example, set up a Trello account. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to set up access to the software. We need to be able to give them permissions. And so there's like a little checklist that we know, okay, right, make sure that they get given a company email address, they get given yeah. a Trello account, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, there's an initiation process that takes place, and that's handled by the designated individual within that department at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then they will then handhold that person through the initial tasks, introduce them to their SOPs, and so that they can then, you know, and staged. So, for example, with customer support, the easiest thing to take care of, for example, is maybe a refund request or some simple tasks. And as they learn the system, then they can become more useful as they're able to answer more and more advanced questions.
Okay. I like that because on one hand, you have the SOPs, the standard operating procedures are just referenced, but then on this other hand, this is actually like an actual training program that someone is dedicated to training that new person who is joining a specific team and yes. going through all those things that you've documented and, you know, giving them access to what they need to get access to in order for them to actually do the work. Precisely. It's kind of like onboarding of customers, but onboarding in employee focus.
Internally. Kind of. Yeah, and before we did that, the challenge was, of course, that we would hire somebody and we'd find that really they were just not really productive for about a month or two before they kind of like absorbed enough information to figure it out.
Yeah.
Because everybody was just running around being busy, trying to get on with what they're doing, and there was no real responsibility whose role it is to ensure that this individual becomes a productive member of the team.
Yeah. And so, since we're talking about present stuff, I'm always, you know, I want to know, how do you track and verify the results that the employees you have are, you know, currently delivering?
Yeah, that's a very, very important question, I guess, and something that I guess we really didn't do well for a very long time, and it's something I see a lot of other businesses just avoiding completely. But really, it all comes down to metrics, and so we had to figure out what are the important metrics for each department. And of course, this is going to be unique to each individual department. So for example, with programming, it may be, well, how many lines of code they write would be an obvious one, but actually that's not that useful. So we had to start looking at different ways to measure the metrics. So what's the complexity of the task that they're working on? And how many points of complexity are they able to complete within one day?
As
an example, obviously metrics such as how many hours do they spend in the office productively is another interesting metric to measure. And with customer support, how many tickets can they answer? How quickly is the response? What's the customer satisfaction rating to those responses? So again, you know, you can break down metrics into sort of more and more precise numbers, and that gives you a really good idea as to which areas of your business really need some attention and focus.
And what I get from this whole thing of, you know, creating like key performance indicators or metrics is really like, you know, looking at that specific role and finding the main metrics that you want from that department so that you can track it on an ongoing basis. But then the tracking of that thing is also tied down to the main goal of what the company is trying to achieve. It's not just random metrics.
Precisely. So, I mean, ultimately, everybody, I'm sure, has heard of the 80-20 principle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the 80-20 principle is all great in theory, but how do you actually apply it? Well, if you don't have the metrics, you can't see where the areas of maximum potential of leverage for growth are. So by having those metrics, you can sit down and say, well, okay, let's say, for example, customer satisfaction is really, really down on customer support tickets. Well, if you can see 8 days to answer a ticket, you probably got an idea why people are not that happy. So you could sit down and try and improve the quality of the response. But really, the response time is the issue, or is the biggest likely issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can now go, right, well, what can we do to reduce our response time down to a not just an acceptable level, but an above average level?
Okay.
And now, of course, we're going to see a huge improvement in that customer satisfaction immediately without even having to improve the quality of any answer.
Yeah, and you know, now that you know you have the business more free time in the business because it's systematized, I'm wondering which areas of the business you focus on now and why.
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, I like to be able to look from my business with fresh eyes. So I like to try and get out of it as much as possible so that I can see it from a different perspective. So I like to go out for motorbike rides. I love kayaking. You know, I moved to New Zealand and live on the water. And it's just beautiful to spend time in nature, to really absorb that, you know, natural energy in the world, to really kind of appreciate what we have. And that just gives me so much more energy and passion for what I do. And, you know, working on other business opportunities that are a little bit, are my kind of current pet focus for the day, if you will. So I still love to chase and explore new ideas, but with the knowledge that everything is running in the background, and you know, I can go in now and be a lot more productive in much shorter bursts because I can get these ideas from outside, and mm-hmm. now I can hand them over to my team and let them action.
Okay. And so what would you say is the next stage of growth for your business, and what do you plan to achieve next and why?
So at the moment, we have a program underway to make our platform available in multiple languages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see a lot of companies focused very much in the US or within at least the English speaking markets.
Yeah.
And that's a real shame because there's so much growth, particularly within Asia right now. And I believe, you know, Africa is not going to be too far behind either.
Yeah.
And you know, these markets are hugely underutilized.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so much potential there. There's just masses and masses of potential. And so because we're English speaking, we tend to neglect these other opportunities. And usually it's just because it's, you know, people put it in the too hard basket. I don't speak that language, so therefore I can't do it, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. It just means you need to build better teams. And you can achieve anything.
Okay, so it's a global expansion for you guys. That's the next plan. I like that. So as we come to the end of the interview, I know the listeners listen all the way to this point. If you were to try to like summarize, you know, like what they have to do, and then give them like a quick, you know, next step that they have to take to try and get to systematize their business so it starts running without them, what would you say?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to do is map out everything. As I mentioned earlier, mind map, get a huge whiteboard or some big pieces of flip chart paper or something, and just start like designing your business as it is now, or writing and mapping out your business as it is now, the different departments, the different individuals, the different processes, and what have you within your business. The moment you do that, you can see things visually. Mm-hmm. It makes life so much easier to realize what you need to focus on and what you need to work on. The next thing is to adopt an attitude of starting to replace yourself for each of the different tasks, as we mentioned earlier, either through technology or through teams. And, you know, that may well be something as simple as having your kid do to clean your office for you and give them a little extra pocket money or whatever it may be. Adopting that mindset and then scaling it up and growing it so you look for opportunities instead of simply saying, I can do that, and just doing it automatically. Mm-hmm. Take the opportunity to say, that needs to be done. Who or what can I do? Get to do that for me. And when you start adopting that pattern and that behavior, that's when you'll start seeing things change.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, is there a question that you were wishing I would have asked you during this interview that I didn't ask you? You know, go ahead and ask the question and then pose the answer as well.
Really, I think that, you know, to be asked, what do people need to do, mm-hmm. that would do to become conscious about their business, to make more of an effort.
Yeah.
I think that's really, really important. And of course, you know, being a marketer, how to find out more about me. That's always a good question to be asked. You know, if you want to learn more about these kind of principles that I've been talking about and my personal journey and realizations and ideas for business, my latest book, which was Create, Automate, Accelerate, that kind of covers a lot more about the concepts that I've been talking about and, you know, how people can learn more, really.
So let me ask you the question in a much more clear, precise way. So what would you say is the best way for the listeners to connect with you? And thank you for doing the interview.
Go to Amazon and grab a copy of Create, Automate, Accelerate. That would be an awesome way to find out a lot more, or just go to leonj.info to find out more about me and the businesses that I'm involved with.
Awesome. So I'm speaking to you, the listener, right now. You've been listening all the way to this point, and I want to thank you for listening so far. And the thing is, if you're I've enjoyed the interview. I want you to do us a favor and go ahead and leave us a honest review on iTunes. And to do that, go to sweetprocess.com/iTunes. It will redirect you to our iTunes page. Reason we want your feedback is the more reviews we get, the more other entrepreneurs can get to know about us, and we get more audience, and that's good for everybody. And so if you're at that stage in your business where you are tired of being the bottleneck and you want to get everything out of your head so your employees know what to do without you, and you want to be able to delegate properly to your employees, well, consider signing up for a free 14-day trial or Sweet Process. Leon, thanks for doing the interview.
My pleasure, Owen. And we're done. We're done. And I just, thanks for that. It's awesome.
Awesome.
Before you go, we want to leave you with a free gift. Get your free systemization checklist. Avoid wasting valuable time documenting procedures for the wrong tasks. Get it right the first time with the systemization checklist. Download the checklist by going to sweetprocess.com/checklist.